What it do? Welcome to the One Fall Podcast. Josh, Joel, and Mole with our favorite pod of the year in review, 2017. One of the greatest years in professional wrestling. Some of the best matches. It's even hard to nominate 10 matches this year. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Yeah, in ring, this is the best year I can think of well, it's the best year, probably ever. Yeah, absolutely. A great year in ring, in wrestling. So it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about it. I'm Mo, current Prince of Charisma, in case you were wondering. I'm good.
I noticed that he completely skipped over that for you, Mo. Like, just completely glossed over it. And I was kind of waiting for, and you just kind of went on. And I was like, is Mo going to bring it up? And sure enough.
Yeah, well, and you're the ultimate babyface, you know.
Yeah, you got that.
But that's not as important. Staff. You're not as important as me.
I would think this year, I think the reason I didn't give any intros is because I have a feeling, and I could be wrong, that a lot of our categories are going to match up this year.
We'll see.
So let's get started right off the bat with the best wrestler male of the year. Last year was clean sweep. We all picked the phenomenal AJ Styles. Joel, I'm going to let you jump off the hop this year.
Oh, okay. It's easy. It's like there's no really challenge to this pick at all. He had a year that rivaled Flair's year when Flair was on fire back in the 80s. And it's
89.
Okada. Yep.
89, yeah.
Okada. If I remember reading correctly, he is the first guy to have a full year with the heavyweight title, and you just look at everything he did this year, every match that he had, from Suzuki to Shibata to the Omega Trilogy to Cody to anytime Omega had a big match, Okada had a big match, he delivered, and he is the ace of Japan, and to be in that spot, it's hard not to pick him.
Mo.
Yeah, I mean, it would be more interesting to pick the second best male wrestler of the year. Mm-hmm. Because he's not just one level above whoever's number. I'm not sure who's number two. Could be Ishii, could be Kushida, could be AJ, could be Omega, could be, you know, it could be a lot of people. But number one is he's at least two or three levels above the next guy. He's so great. And the reason why he's so great, the thing that sets him apart, you talk about those great matches, but it's that he has these great matches, and they're all so different. He never, like a guy like Omega is great, but Omega kind of makes the opponent come to him and do his thing. Whereas Okada does the things that makes the opponent look great. So it's so different with everybody. His match was, you know, Minoru Suzuki is so wildly different than a match with Ibushi, you know? Whereas you can't say that for everybody else. And that's what just makes him sets him apart as a talent that is 30 years old and almost unbearably good.
And to add to your point, Mo, it builds off that Flair comparison because that's what Flair did. Flair could go and have these matches and he could elevate everyone else around him and make them look that much better. Yeah. And that's what Okada does.
Flair was a bit of a routine man, but he managed to make other people look good. Mm-hmm. And that he might be the best ever. And it's so hilarious to me. You always think about a Hunter who, idolizes Flair, and yet he can lose to people and not make them look good. Whereas Flair can beat people and make them look good. It's an incredible talent. And yeah, I mean, that's one of the things Okada was just amazing at.
I'm going to make it a clean sweep as well, and I'm also going to pick Okada. As someone that came in out of the three of us that was the least on the New Japan side of things, he just brought me full circle into really appreciating what New Japan can do. The trilogy with Omega was unbelievable, really, and then the match that he had with Suzuki, which I finally got a chance to see over the last few days, phenomenal. And then the match with Shibata too, which was just showing that to some non-wrestling friends, just was a mind-blowing thing. And some that were in it to MMA and stuff like that, it's like, what is this? Like, this is what wrestling is over there. And I thought that's something with what Okada has been able to do is something that has been able to lean, as we go into Wrestle Kingdom 4, the mainstream over to make it the promotion it did. Kenny Omega really pushed this for me, though. He had the second half of the year here. He made a strong push to take my Wrestler of the Year. He really pushed it, but at the end of the day, Kazuchika Okada, without a doubt to me, was the wrestler of 2017 when you look back at this year.
And
yeah, his first half was definitely stronger than his second half, but even then he had like incredible matches, and he's the best. He's the best.
And a fun little tidbit that I found out today, apparently Shibata, after his match against Okada, due to everything he'd been through physically, he was given a 17% chance of survival.
Holy shit.
Jeez.
And he still wants to rehab and wrestle, so...
It's because he's insane.
So there we go. The 2 years in a row now, a clean sweep. The next one, it's a little more difficult. The female wrestler of the year, Mo, we'll start with you.
Well, I'm going to pick my same pick as last year. I mean, I don't see any reason to not pick, you know, Asuka. She's the best. As far as technically who is your best wrestler, who's a female in at least North America, if not the world, it's her. And combine that with, you know, the incredible reign as NXT champion and then being called up to the roster and immediately being put in a top spot, you know, as a... And she's going to have a big spot in 2018. There's no question. Their plans for her this year are huge. So I don't see how it could be anybody else for me.
Joel?
It's Asuka. Reign in NXT solidified it. And just her being up in the main roster and them not fully screwing it up yet has been impressive. Yet. And I think that she had a really good 2017, and just like Mo said, next year is going to be bigger for her. And I think she is definitely someone you can build a women's division in either Raw or SmackDown around. You could build a division around her, any company you want, but with her being in WWE, either Raw or SmackDown can really build around her and just build that women's division up. We talk a lot about the women's revolution and all that stuff, and say what you will about it, but to get to see a talent like Asuka to perform, and Asuka, like seeing Asuka live last year was great, and I can't wait to see her this year.
Yeah, she was tremendous. She's mine also of the year. I think you guys have kind of hit on everything, just from starting the year with that Fatal 4-Way at the TakeOver in, I believe it's San Antonio, to the end with the great performance she had in the Survivor Series match. Really, there's no one. It was kind of a weaker year for the women's division, really. I don't even really know who the second would be, to be honest. You have some really good performers of the company. Like Tessa Blanchard had a really nice year outside of the company.
Probably Ember Moon.
Ember Moon,
Probably be my number two if I had to.
Kairi Sane had a nice performance in the Mae Young Classic, but there's no real standout at the second for me.
Yeah, I agree.
The next one is the Tag Team of the Year. I'll start with this one. I think there's a lot of different ways you can go with, and I think I know where you guys are going to go. For me, I'm just going to go by what I thought was the best in-ring performers this year. And I think they entirely changed the vision of them. Their promos were good. They were the best part of kickoff episodes. And I'm going with the Usos. I just thought that every match that they had delivered. They made that rap battle. It could have been terrible. The New Day definitely helped in that. But that rap battle segment could have been terrible. Every time they talked, you want to listen. And it's a nice 360 from where they were before. Joel?
Well, I don't think there's any challenge in who my pick is. It's the Young Bucks. They say what you will about in-ring. Maybe they didn't have as many great matches as what the Usos did. But to be at the level that they are with the Hot Topic and just what they've done for independent wrestling, and just these guys have pop figures coming out for themselves. Like, they have built a brand by themselves between being the Elite, everything that they've done. It's just, you can't name any other tag team that has done that, that has gone out on their own and in today's day and age taken everything that they've at their disposal, from YouTube to social media, to being able to engage an audience and build an audience just for these two guys. And this year they had the ladder match with the Hardys, so that's definitely something to note and keep in mind. But to me, it's the Young Bucks. Everything that they've done business-wise, and I mean, rolling into 2018 with the all-in pay-per-view that they're talking about doing, it sounds like it's going to be in Chicago, but the fact that they're self-financing their own indie show is pretty darn cool. So, the Young Bucks.
Mo?
I was, of all the categories, I think this is the one I was most interested because to hear what you guys thought, because, yeah, it was one team reinvented themselves, had great promos, had a great feud with the New Day, and you know, they seem so lame. Like, when the Usos got that stink of being the cousins of Roman Reigns on them, and then first turned heel, and the heel turn didn't take very well, and it was booked poorly, they just looked so lame, and they looked done, and the way they've come back, and it's all in the ring. And then you got the other guys who, you know, they're great in the ring, but they don't have any real opponents out there who are great for them right now. So you're voting on them for what they've done outside the ring, which is incredible.
Exactly.
I mean, Colt Cabana essentially is the first guy to market himself and make a great living outside the. But these guys have taken it to a whole other level, and their importance in wrestling is so incredible to what their legacy can be to people who come now and never go to the WWE and make a living. And so it's a really fascinating one. It's like, what are you voting for? You're voting for the most influential, important, iconic legacy, which is definitely the Young Bucks, or are you voting for the best in-year ring? And I, at the end of the day, it's a wrestling award, so I'm going to go Usos, but it was super close. It's like, I wish I could give it to both of them.
Yeah.
Because they're different, but they both deserve it, but for different things.
They both definitely nailed it, and I even though I did pick the Usos, by the way, last year, we split the vote last year, too. I picked the Revival, and you guys both picked the Young Bucks, but even though, despite picking the Usos, it wasn't easy, like you said, Mo. It's the influence these guys have had on wrestling this year, and what we're coming into 2018, they're going to be such a big part of what 2018 can be, and having that feeling that we had when it was the Monday Night War. They're making us feel like New Japan and ROH are more of a threat, and being an indie star isn't the worst thing in the world. It's what the Bucks have made you do, even though they don't have any super matches this year that you can write off about, between the Twitter controversies that they have with Daniel Cormier, the Hot Topic stuff, the Funko Pops, the Invasion. They have definitely set the world on fire and made themselves a name. Well, but
let's put it this way. Let's put it this way. They're bigger stars than the Usos. They've never been in the WWE. They've never. The Usos have the WWE machine behind them, and they are undoubtedly bigger stars to the mainstream or to the wrestling community than the Usos. That's incredible.
And you look at who their cousins are, too, with The Rock and Yokozuna and Roman Reigns. They have the pedigree to have that as well. But that's a very good point.
And the other thing is, you look out in the WWE crowd, what shirt do you see?
Roman Empires?
Nope.
See a lot of Bullet Club shirts.
It's
the new NWO, it's the new Austin 316.
And say what you will about the Bullet Club, they've already been built up already, but I feel like guys like the Young Bucks, Cody, Kenny, have helped build that brand up. I thought the Bullet Club was starting to wane a little bit and starting to kind of drift a bit, but they've had a really strong resurgence. And I mean, you go to Hot Topic and you look and you see New Japan shirts in Canada. I never thought that would be possible. I always thought it'd be so cool if there was this store that I could go and grab a Young Buck shirt or a Cody shirt or a Naito shirt even. They have Naito shirts now.
Hell, they have Bone Soldier.
Yeah.
I think that's Dave Meltzer's favorite Bullet Club.
The tag team one, I thought would be split. This one, I think, will be one of the ones that we all do differently. Best on the mic. It was a great year for the microphone. Last year, I picked Conor McGregor. Joel, you picked Daniel Bryan. And Mo, you picked Adam Cole Bebe. Mo, I'm going to let you lead it off in this one.
Ooh, that's on the mic. It is Paul Heyman, isn't it? Like, he's not there every week. But when he's there, nobody's better. You know, when I think of most of the best, he's the guy who cuts the promo that commands your attention, is entertaining, gets over the match, gets over the opponent, and gets over his guy. He is, and it doesn't feel scripted. He is the best promo consistently. You know, not my number one promo as far as actual best promo of the year, but as a consistent promo, Paul Heyman's the guy.
Joel, who do you got?
It's Heyman. Like, Mo said it best. There's no one out there, when you know Paul Heyman.
As usual.
Heyman's... Pardon?
As usual.
You sit there and you look at what Heyman brings to any... You look at what Heyman brought to the Joe feud. How he played such an intricate part in that. You look at how he hyped up AJ. You look at whenever he touches a mic and he starts talking, you listen. It's like you sit there and you know what you're listening to is a once-in-a-lifetime type performer. There will never be anyone quite like Paul Heyman and what he is able to do. And it's very fitting that he's paired with a once-in-a-lifetime performer like Brock. Paul Heyman, it'll be a very sad day when he retires from pro wrestling.
This award was a really hard one for me to go with. I didn't pick Heyman. It came down to three guys for me in this category. And I'm just going with the guy that every week they came out, they carried their segment. And it's going to be a little bit of a surprise, but I'm picking The Miz. Every week The Miz was on TV, from that John Cena promo to any time he stepped in from the Survivor Series stuff that he had to do to build up with. The Braun Strowman feud, when they had the stuff in the limo there, even though I wasn't a huge fan, he carried a segment with his talking consistently. When he went to Raw, some people considered him dead and buried, and The Miz got on the mic and did what he did best, talked his way, performed his way to be one of the top guys on Raw. Unfortunately, you look where everybody else is, they jump ahead of him with the Rollins and the Romans and everything like that. But the one thing The Miz guaranteed when he was on the microphone, and he even went toe-to-toe with John Cena and held his own, that's why The Miz is my best on the mic of 2017.
You know, that's a good point because, in some ways, I think you could vote that he was the MVP of the WWE.
You could.
Because he did manage to make things consistently entertaining, even when he wasn't given the best material. He really did a good job with that, and so he's very underappreciated. I think he's a good choice. Who were the other two? Miz was your pick. Who were the other two that you were considering?
Jericho. I just didn't think there was enough, but like what he did with Owens and then this Kenny Omega stuff.
Oh, the Omega stuff's great.
Unbelievable. There's just that in-between gap. Jericho was a hair off from top of The Miz for me, and then Kevin Owens also, which is having a tremendous year as well.
I'm kind of surprised none of us consider Samoa Joe himself because
Joe was someone.
Joe's had great promos. Yeah,
yeah, he did a really good job, especially with that Brock thing. It just came to me with the consistency of what The Miz did was great. Heyman, you know, I mean, even the line about when the guy proposed to his girl, and that was a great line by Heyman. Something I had to consider about.
Oh, you know what I mean? Yeah, that improv there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the best. Yeah, that was awesome.
The best announcer. Last year, I went with Corey Graves. Joe, you went with Mauro Ranallo. And Mo, you went with Steve Corino. I don't think, unfortunately, you can go with Corino this year. He's been kind of quiet. Obviously, he's in the Performance Center right now. But we'll leave things off with Joel. Joel, who is your announcer of the year?
This one's a little bit tricky. But I think I'm going to go with Kevin Kelly. In Japan. Just whenever he called the matches, he called with passion. He delivered the information you needed. It was such a simple and easy to digest bit of information. He could have fun with Silas? Whatever, however you pronounce his name. And it just worked. There's nothing really more to it than it's just something simple and easy. And he goes out, he does his job, and then he goes home.
It's a very good pick. I'm going to go on the opposite side of the Jew Japan booth, and I'm going to go with Dan Callis, the Jackal, formerly known as the Jackal. Guy that came in, you know, had a little bit of a rough start, but then he was just such a good job with color commentary. And the way that he would push Kenny Omega to the point that he even got involved in the storyline with Kenny Omega, he did such a good job and gave you what a color commentator could do and should do for the world of professional wrestling, and really brought you involved. And when those Kenny Omega match happens, it reminded me kind of back in the day with Lawler to the nth degree of rooting against Bret Hart and the emphasis that he and Bobby Heenan, even when Bobby Heenan would push for Flair, push for Perfect, kind of had that a little bit with Kevin with Don Callis. So that's why Don Callis is my announcer of the year, Mo.
You know, it's interesting because I mean, I think that Callis and Kelly have that great chemistry. They have that Bobby Heenan, Gorilla Monsoon chemistry type deal. And what's interesting about that to me is that's what Carino and Kelly had.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that Kevin Kelly is the right choice.
Okay.
Because he's managed to have two different guys with completely different personalities and have great chemistry with both of them and get over the product for two straight years in Carino and Callis. And I think that's the sign of a true professional. So, I think he's the guy to go with.
So the next one is a really hard one for me, maybe easy, but so last year was the best non-wrestling performer. Mo, you picked Steven Regal. Joel, you picked Renee Young, and I picked Vanguard 1.
Vanguard 1.
This year, it's a little more difficult. There wasn't as many. I mean, you could go with the default Paul Heyman. That's an easy pick there. I'm going to start with you one again on this, Mo. This one's a little bit harder of the best non-wrestling performer.
Well, the best non-wrestling performers is, I would say, Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
You know, as much as, like you say, Heyman is the easy pick and the right pick in a lot of ways. The end of the day, Daniel Bryan's there every week. He feels sincere when he performs. And so he makes the angles feel important. And he's just a good, likable performer. And I don't know if they're planning to turn him heel or not, or what they're going to try and ruin his career when he leaves the WWE. I don't know what's going on for all this political behind-the-scenes stuff. But he was great. He's the main reason I miss talking smack. Yeah, Daniel Bryan for me.
I'm going to agree with you. It's also Daniel Bryan for me. This even goes to things like Total Bellas and Total Divas. He's the highlight of, you know, there's some tough watches on that sometimes of storylines in there. But anytime Bryan comes on and some of the stuff he talks about, he's one of the reasons I kind of want to come back and watch it. And when he's in the ring, the promo that he cuts on AJ Styles was, pardon the pun, but phenomenal. And every time he's on the screen, you want to pay attention to him. He does such a good job. You know, he was one of the best wrestlers in the world, and now he's one of the best off-screen characters in the world. And I would imagine Joel, being the Daniel Bryan mark he is, may make this a clean sweep.
It's not hard. There's not many guys besides Paul Heyman that I will rewind to watch the start of the show, knowing that they have an opening promo. Daniel Bryan's promo when he hyped AJ was fantastic. It was the promo he wanted to cut for himself when he faces Brock, but that's not going to happen. He's had so many great lines this year. He gets a bigger reaction than some of your current active talents on your roster.
Some of.
Yeah. A lot of your guys. And it's because I think Daniel Bryan, like you said, he has sincerity to him. He feels real. He feels like a person that's actually talking, not someone sitting there reading his lines and reading it word for word. Suffering succotash. when you get Bryan out there, it's a human being. It's someone real. And I've struggled with this so much with Bryan potentially wrestling, maybe not wrestling, maybe wrestling for WWE, maybe wrestling against Cody Rhodes. Who knows? But I like Brian so much that I'm going to follow him where he goes. And I'm very intrigued to see how many more fans follow him wherever he goes. Because he was, to me, I still watch, there's one segment that I'll watch every once in a while. Just because it's incredible to see. And it's when he was in that cage with Bray Wyatt. And he turns on the Wyatt family. It was such a crap storyline how they did it. And you could tell that they were trying to kind of kill his momentum. But that whole crowd was in unison doing the yes chant. And he was able to control that crowd. And he's just been able to carry that along. For a guy, when he first came into WWE, the concern of him having no personality to where he is now is night and day.
That's a good point.
I gotta agree. So Daniel Bryan, our best non-wrestling performer. Next, the most improved. Last year, I picked The Miz. Joel, you picked Braun Strowman. And Mo, you picked The Revival. I'll take the lead on this one. And it's a guy that I always thought had the potential to be something. And he got his opportunity and really took it and became one of the biggest names in professional wrestling this year. And that's Cody Rhodes. Cody took the risk, asked out of his contract, was stuck in the Stardust character. We always knew he was capable of something. The best part about him in WWE is he always took whatever gimmick it was, whether it be the mustache or the face mask or Stardust, and he gave it his best. And then he got to go on the independents with Ring of Honor and Japan. And when he had that opportunity, he made the best of it, from having the actual Ring of Honor to the stuff that he did with the Bullet Club to his appearances on Being the Elite. No matter what Cody Rhodes did, he made sure that you knew who he was and what the name was, and he became one of the biggest stars in professional wrestling this year. So my most improved is Cody Rhodes. Joel?
It's easy. Cody gambled on himself. Cody could have easily stayed in his role and collect paychecks and just punched in and punched out and went home. But he took a massive gamble. This could have been a complete flop. Even with him joining the Bullet Club, him being maybe having a feud with Kenny, it could have all failed. Yet this guy has come out, and I won't say he's delivered five-star classics, because that's not Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes is not your Okada, Omega-level type wrestler. But what Cody is he's a character. He has become a persona, and he's built on that, and he continues to build on it. And you see it in Being the Elite, and you see it when he's in the ring. You see it with his dyed blonde hair now. He's not the best in-ring guy, but he went from being Stardust and being a maybe on main event, maybe just in the house shows, to now being a guy was champion for ROH, and one of the key figures for the Bullet Club. And I think he will continue to be a key figure for the Bullet Club as that group goes through changes. But I do think Cody is building himself back up to come back into the WWE and be a bigger deal.
Mo.
No, that's an interesting pick, because I hadn't even thought about him. Because I don't think of Cody as being somebody who's improved so much as being somebody who was always this good, just never got the chance.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like The Miz, where I feel it more like last year, where it wasn't that he had improved, it's just that he found himself again and he got the chance. I kind of figured you guys for sure were going Braun Strowman.
Strowman was a consideration for me, yeah. I just thought that the impact that Cody, it's kind of that Bucks kind of thing too, the impact of Cody and just the jump that he had. Strowman had kind of made a big jump last year. I mean, his impact was much more this year, for sure. But I thought the jump that Cody made compared to the jump that Stro had kind of certified himself coming into 2017. And Cody took the ball and really jumped up. Being Ring of Honor champion also kind of made a little bit of a jump for me with Cody as well.
When did Stro's feud with Reigns start? It was late last year, wasn't it?
It was after WrestleMania. That's when the ambulance stuff all happens.
Last year? In 2016?
This year. This 2017. This year? Yeah.
Was it after WrestleMania? I thought it was before WrestleMania for sure.
It was before.
I think they had a match leading into Mania.
Oh, they did. Fastlane. Yeah, right. Okay.
That was where, I mean, he established himself to me. Was up until then, he was just, you know, the big guy that you were waiting for somebody to beat, and he would be, and then he'd be done, and he didn't. So, I mean, like I said, I mean, I expected you guys to go with him, and he definitely improved. He's my number two pick. Number one pick, though, is I'm going with a guy who I feel truly improved over the year. A guy who came in who was green and not very good and not very exposed, and has gotten much better, and the company's starting to push, and they recognize him. And that's a guy not a lot of people have heard about yet, but his name is Flip Gordon in ROH.
Wow.
To me, he's the most improved guy over the course of a year from where he was to where he is to where he will be. And to me, this guy, he needs some help on his promos and connecting with the audience a little bit. But as far as somebody who's just gotten better and now to the point where he feels like he's ready to be a star compared to somebody who was nobody a year ago that anybody had heard of, to me, that's a true, really improved guy. So that's my pick.
It's a great pick, Mo. It's a very good pick.
Do you think Flip Gordon makes the jump to NXT, or do you think he needs to stay on the indies for a little bit longer too?
I think he'll be with ROH for at least a couple of years. You see, most of these guys don't necessarily go that quickly. Most of them are there for a couple of years, and I think he will be. But obviously, I mean, again, and how many smaller guys does WWE want? I don't know, but he's got crazy athleticism, and the fact that he's got I believe in the Army Reserves is certainly something WWE would like a lot, marketing wise. So yeah, he's probably eventually headed there.
It's funny, Mo, when you were describing your guy, it was almost my number two pick, which was the Velveteen Dream.
Velveteen Dream improved so damn much this year. He's another excellent choice. Like, it's funny when I look at NXT. You think of the people the up until this year, the shot at NXT has been, well, it's not really that good at developing people, because let's face it, the guys coming out of there are Sami Zayn and Samoa Joe and Finn Balor and all these guys. And then you look at the class right now and you're like, man, it's like Velveteen Dream and the Authors of Pain and Killian Dane and you're like, they're developing people all of a sudden to feel like
they really are. I mean, even
and be good.
Even look at Elias.
It's changed.
Look at Elias, who maybe his name will come up later. Elias is the guy that you could have entirely ridden off.
Oh yeah.
And Elias had he's a nice go-to. He is a utility player for the company.
Hey, you know what? If I had been, Paul Heyman, I didn't even think of anybody else because he was so far ahead. You're going to talk about a guy who's there week to week, cutting great promos and doing a great job in his role. Elias is that guy.
I know. I can't believe it. He's been great. And maybe we'll get to him in a little bit. The best comeback last year. I picked Goldberg. Joel picked Goldberg. Mo's like, I'm not having any of that. I'm picking Matt Hardy. So, Mo, you were the difference maker last year. What are you going with this year for the best comeback?
Give me a moment to think about this. Like I said, I didn't have the list, so I actually have to think about who is the
best. Well, I have my pick if you guys want me to go with my pick first. Because this one was a little bit tough, but I have my pick.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead?
Unless, Joel, do you have yours at all?
I've got an idea, but you go with yours. You're chomping at the bit.
So mine was a guy that it's hard. This one, we didn't have the veteran that came back this year. I mean, Kurt, had a nice year, but Kurt's not in that comeback category really for me. I don't think any of us want to pick Hunter for what he did around Survivor Series. I'm sure he'll be more in the worst category. I'm picking Neville because that's a guy that was an NXT champion, had a tremendous time in NXT, and he was given the platform, showed what he could do, and it didn't end great, but when he was on top, he was unbelievable at the top of the cruiserweights for 205 Live. So I'm going to go with Neville for the best comeback. Joel?
I've been hemming and hawing at this because there's potentially a couple choices. I think comeback, I want to say one name, but I'm not sure. I'll go with it. I think Enzo Amore had a rebound year, came back, because this was a guy that we all thought once he got away from Cass and that whole gimmick died off, he was going to die off. both him and Cass were going to fizzle out. And not only that, but this was a guy that has that changes in the hallway, that he is not welcome in that locker room. Yet he is a two-time champion. He is the face of the cruiserweight division, and he main evented and did the closing segments twice. Three times, maybe, for that cruiserweight division.
Quite a few.
This is a guy that should have been dead in the water, and I don't know, give it a couple more weeks. He very well might be dead in the water. But right now, this is a guy that should be nothing, yet is something.
Mo, who do you got? Tough one, I know. Is Mo still there? Joel, are you still there?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. I had muted it because I was coughing.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah, and I'll just say, Joel, I don't like your pick.
That's all right.
You're allowed to have your opinion, but I don't like... Boy, I don't like that at all. So just go with that. And I'll say Mickey James. Because Mickey James, really, I mean, a couple of years ago, her career was dead. And she came in and she wasn't...
tracked into the train.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I mean, she never looked like she'd get back to the WWE. And then she goes to NXT. And when she first comes up to the roster, she's getting no reaction. But now she gets a reaction. She's somebody who's done really well with the material she's been given. When it's time to talk, she's talked well. When she's given a chance to wrestle, she's wrestled well. It's not spectacular, but it's a perfect example of somebody who makes chicken salad out of chicken shit. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I'll go with Mickey James. I think she's done a hell of a job to come back as far as she has. And also, I don't like Enzo Amore as a pick.
Best gimmick. Last year was a clean sweep for Broken Matt Hardy. Mo, what are we going with for best gimmick this year?
Oh, Woken Matt Hardy.
Okay. Right off the bat, eh?
No. You know, the best gimmick to me is Aleister Black.
Ooh, good pick.
I think that's his gimmick is just it's fantastic, and he does it so damn well, and it's completely unique, and they haven't made him change his in-ring style as much as they historically have either, and that's helped. So I mean, he's my pick for gimmick of the year.
Joel,
Velveteen Dream.
Yeah,
it was one moment, and he's been kind of at that surface, but the gimmicks just clicked right up. When he came out, had that match against Black, and he had a great opponent with Black being his opponent. It was great contrast for him. But just to me this year, it seemed a little bit more, we've seen some of these gimmicks, so nothing really, we've seen kind of the cleaner, and we've seen the NWO/Bullet Club type gimmick, and we've seen what Cena is, and we've seen what so many of these guys are already. The Velveteen Dream, to me, is a bit of a fresh air and bit of a nice little change of pace. So that's why, for me, it's not as long for the year, but he just stands out to me.
I think you guys had both good picks. Both guys were consideration. Mine is Braun Strowman. He's just a giant that destroys shit, and it just works for whatever gimmick match he's put in, for whatever scenario he's put in, it just works. So, Braun Strowman.
It does work.
Next up, this is going to be a fun one because, like I said, this year was one of the best in-ring years we've ever had. It's hard to do a top 10 and fit them all in, so it'd be hard to imagine just picking one. Or the one, to me, does stick out, but we'll see what happens. So, last year for Match of the Year, I picked the two out of three between Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano, and The Revival. Joel, you picked Nakamura versus Sami Zayn. And Mo, you picked Naito versus Kenny Omega. Joel, let me let you lead the charge on this one.
Man, this is tough.
It's not an easy one.
There's so many moments and matches and things that happened this year that you were just, like, it was fantastic in-ring from January 4th all the way to the 31st, it wasn't hard to find quality matches to watch. But I think for me, the match of the year is the 60-minute Broadway between Kenny and Okada. It just has so many moments to it. And recently, I have a friend that I had started sending the trilogy to watch. And he just was enthralled by it right away. He's a wrestling fan. And he'd never seen the three matches. And just going back, I'm like, well, I'll watch them as well, and then we can talk about it. Just watching that second match was just... Both of them are another level, specifically Okada. Like, that to me was the match of the year. And the fact that they went back to it after, I think it was 5 months between the first one, and to deliver the way they did, and deliver in such a... The way that they did, and deliver differently than what the first match was, build off that story, just impressed me. And when they finally get to Omega Okada 4, I'm very excited that he had built my anticipation for more matchups between these two. And it's not like WWE where you see things over and over and over again and they beat a dead horse. This is going to be tucked away and this is going to be kept away, and neither of these guys are really going to touch much. And they've done it perfectly. And I think Omega Okada 2 is the pinnacle of it. The potential pinnacle. But I think 4 could easily be even better. But for me, it's 2.
Bo.
Yeah, I mean, you picked the same one I would pick. I mean, I didn't think... In a year where I gave out 2 5-star matches, and I hadn't given out one since 2011, I'm historically... difficult to get a 5-star rating out of. The last one was, I think it was 2011 with Cena and the Money in the Bank between Cena and Punk.
Wow.
And, and then I see this Minoru Suzuki match against Okada. That's unbelievable. I love it. I'm literally sitting there watching him work this leg thinking, he's really hurt. I know wrestling is not real. I know it's, but he's really hurt him. He's really hurt. Like, because it just, and they just kept going on. It felt like watching somebody literally be tortured. And yet, it was a work. It was so brilliant. I'm like, nothing's going to top that. And then Okada, and you said so much of it. Like, the pressure on Okada and Omega was unbelievable after, you know, the 6-star first match. And they go an hour. And the announcing is great. Kevin Kelly and Don Callis getting over the fact that the first match, he never hit the one-winged angel. Omega never hit it. In this one, he'll finally hit it. And when he does hit it, Okada can actually reach the ropes. But Okada beat him last time with the clothesline, and now he's keeps hitting his Rainmaker clothesline. But Omega put on 15 pounds of muscle, so now it's not having the same effect, and he can't beat him with it. So there's no way he can beat him. And at the end, Okada's just hitting the Rainmaker and hitting the drop kicks, his top two moves, just looking to survive. And then they go 60 minutes, and you feel like he gets out of there and he still has the belt, but he just survived Omega. And you're like, this is such a brilliant match and brilliant storytelling, and like it's up there for best match I've ever seen. A great match. Oh yeah! If Shibata and Omega, if that match hadn't cost Shibata his career and almost his life, that would have been 5 stars. I ended up giving it 4 3/4, and maybe it's wrong to say, oh, I'm not gonna on a match that almost cost a guy his life, I won't give it that because I don't want people doing those stiff real headbutts. Maybe it should be, man, if he's willing to go that far, I should respect it and give it 5.5 stars and give it match of the year. But at the end of the day, the it's hurt by the fact that it cost a great wrestler's career.
That's it's funny. I'm picking Okada Omega 2 as well. That Shibata match, Mo, like you said, unbelievable. It fortunately hurts because of how hurt Shibata could be. But like you really. You look at that match and just the two beating the piss out of each other.
And the fact that headbutt, it wouldn't have been that good without it. That moment where you hear that crack and then you see the blood trickling down, that's an iconic moment. Like, I could see that in my head so perfectly. Like,
it's
the most visual thing.
You know what's crazy too is
Kushida
and Ospreay had an amazing match, and that's going to almost be forgotten.
Jay White,
not the match.
Ospreay and Jay White and ROH had an incredible match. Then you had the two Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate matches that were unbelievable. Yeah. This last one in NXT and the unbelievable one and Cena and AJ at Royal Rumble and then Tiger Mask W and Okada and like
Kota just... and Tanahashi had a great match too.
Oh, yeah.
It was and then even Naito, I can never say his name right. Naito and Omega, great match there as well.
Incredible. And Ishii and Omega had an incredible match. And there's just so many great matches.
Oh, the Omega and Elgin one also was a very good match.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Just so many great matches this year.
I guess if we're going to continue this for the feud of the year, are we going to clean sweep this, you guys think, as well? I'll go back to what we had for feud of the year last year. I had Nakamura versus Samoa Joe. Joe, you had AJ Styles versus John Cena. And Mo, you had Kyle. You had Cole versus O'Reilly. All great picks. Mo, I'm going to let you lead off of this. What is your feud of the year?
Well, you know, it's funny because you had the Omega Okada, and yet I don't think of it as a feud. I mean, it lasted the whole year. If you were to say to me rivalry of the year, then I would say Omega Okada because, you know, three best matches you can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
But if you're saying feud of the year, to me that implies a hatred and a little of a violence. And actually getting that across and elevating both guys coming out of it as bigger stars, arguably, that was Strowman and Reigns.
Yes! Like,
as silly as it as some of that stuff was, I think that's their best feud of the year.
Yes.
Wow. Is that what you're picking too as well, Joel?
Yes, because, not to interrupt you, Mo, but I'm going to interrupt you.
I'm done.
It worked. It shouldn't have worked. Him flipping the ambulance, him doing the gurney thing, and the dummy falling, none of it should work. Yet, somehow, it constantly worked, and it elevated Strowman. And I think the hatred for Roman helped so much because it helped build up Braun, because people are like, well, this guy's a cartoon, so I want to see this cartoon destroy Roman. And it worked. And I enjoyed every minute of it. Most minutes. There were a few minutes that were a little bit, but nevertheless, you had the baby face that's supposed to replace John Cena almost murder a man. And yet somehow it all worked. They hated each other. They kept going back and forth. And each moment...
I'm not finished with you.
Huh? Yeah.
I'm not finished with you.
That's now a thing.
Yeah.
Because of this.
I have a different pick than the two of you. I think that is an excellent pick. And I think Mo, he stole my words. I think Okada and Omega is a great set of matches, but it's not a great feud. A great feud, you have to have hatred. And you have to have a buildup of hatred to want to see that match. And that's why my feud of the year is Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho. Because in a short time, these two have made you want to see a match that you already wanted to see, but you feel there is an intensity and a hatred between Jericho and Omega.
I plan to give that my my feud of the year next year.
That's what I did. Baited and the Jericho rubbing the blood on his face.
That's so great.
And talking about the stuff in the press conference. Jericho has taken his level up to another level, if that was even possible. And it's doing the one thing that they needed to do, which is bringing a lot of North American eyes in. Okada and Naito is going to be a great match. There's no denying that. But the match that people in North America are going to watch is Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega. And they were going to do it before because of the names, but now they're going to do it because of what this feud is. So that's why I got Jericho and Omega.
I don't disagree at all. I need to see the match. That's the next logical thing. And that doesn't come until 2018. So
What kind of stopped me, but I have just been so intrigued. And I mean, Jericho KO was something else I had there. Strowman Roman was something else I considered, but this is just one of those all-time kind of feuds that you just sink your teeth into and you want to get to it. And the match could suck, and maybe that takes away from it, but as far as what the feud is, it has been unbelievable.
And I like the interview that Omega had with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, where he said, "Chris Jericho said to me, keep it simple, simple works best." And he, you know, he's like, "I've learned a lot from Chris Jericho in this." And, you know, Chris Jericho reinventing his character and everything. And it is, it's amazing, once again, to see another guy who leaves WWE and can be creative on his own. Can be his own, do his own stories and feuds and setups, and it's better than what they, you know. I mean, he has, you know, he's good anytime, but it's even better seeing him have that creative control, and just it makes you long for a little more of that in the WWE all the time.
Yeah,
great picks there, Joel. Anything else to add before we go into the next subject?
There's one other feud that I didn't give it, but I was tempted to. But it was a feud that will never have a full payoff as in a match. But I think one of the feuds of this year that really stood out and got wrestling fans talking and created a conversation, it was WWE versus the Young Bucks.
From the I thought you were going to go Miz and Bryan.
Yeah, I thought you were too. That's where I thought you were
going. Yeah, I thought you were
going to say Miz and Bryan. That's another one as well. There's a lot of where it's internally where it's WWE versus someone on the outside, whether it or inside, whether it's Brian or the Bucks. And that's the thing that's really weird to me, that this big company will feud with guys. The Young Bucks thing kind of makes sense. The Daniel Bryan feud for his health and well-being kind of makes sense. But it just seems like it's something that the WWE just seems to feud with guys that they don't... How can I word this? Now I gotta think.
Vince McMahon is petty.
Yes, that is the biggest thing, and that is one of the reasons why Hunter will be successful, because Hunter will be the heir to the throne, is because I think he's even more petty than Vince is. And I think that will be something that will carry on, where the WWE will be petty, and they'll be petty with Brian, and they're going to be petty with the Young Bucks. Cease and desist, I think they've got past it. But just WWE feuding with different wrestlers, this big, massive organization feuding with either your own employees or someone on the outside that shouldn't matter at all. They're ants to the WWE. Like, it's crazy.
Look at that Jimmy Jacobs thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was silly.
Yeah, yeah. But again, that's how Vince has always been like this. Remember when Vince freaks out when Kevin Steen had a doll out with ROH before, you know, they were able to put a doll up with Kevin Owens, and it was like, we're not signing anybody else from ROH anymore. That's it. No more ROH guys ever. And it's like, moron. Like, obviously didn't stick with it, but he's insane.
We'll get to that for maybe the story of next year in a bit here. Best angle. It was a clean sweep last year. We're picking the final deletion. I'll take the lead on this one. To me, the best angle was the Festival of Friendship. Just everything in that, from Jericho saying, why is my name on this list, to you really got the full Jericho experience. You could really see his work with the Groundlings really paying off. And we had been anticipating this breakup between KO and Jericho. And I will admit, I didn't think the breakup was coming at that point. I thought they were going to lead it on a little bit more, and maybe he would cost KO the match to Goldberg, and then we would go forward with it. So this caught me totally off guard, and I thought they built it up tremendously, Mo.
Yeah, I didn't think the timing was quite right with it. That's why I wouldn't pick it. But, I mean, it was fantastically well done. My pick is the angle where Joe choked out Paul Heyman.
Oh, that was good.
Where, you know, he gets him in the corner. And the mic is down, and the camera's just the camera mic's picking it up quietly. He just looks at him very calmly, very almost compassionately, explains to him, "I'm going to choke you out right now, and it is going to hurt." And then he does it. Like, and you're like, this guy's like a total cold-hearted psychopath. And Heyman hasn't been. Nobody's touched Heyman really since in years, right?
Even so, ACW, really.
Yeah. So this was really, like, it was just so well done. Both guys performed so beautifully, and I thought it was awesome.
Joel.
Oh, angle of the year. This one's tricky because there's been a few things that have happened this year that have been solid angles that whether they built to a quality match or not remains to be seen. But I think the angle for me that stands out that I'm going to remember from this year is Jericho in New Japan. From the announcement to the attack to the press conference.
So which Pacific won then? Just the first attack?
It'd be...
They pretty much tie in together as one angle to me.
It's this whole this guy that you never would have thought of all the people that would be in New Japan right now. This Vince McMahon loyalist who talks about his conversations with Vince, who talks about how close he is in his books with Vince, to be with the guys that are trying to rival your company. And the way they did it, the how quiet it was kept. No one saw this coming. And when it was announced and that video played, that was huge. That was huge. That's
awesome.
That stopped the wrestling community on the internet dead in its tracks. And everyone had to see this video. And then everyone was talking about it. And then Jericho shows up at New Japan and you had no idea he was going to be there after the Trent match. And he beats Kenny down and he's bloodied and he's beaten and he's got the title and he's got blood on him. And then that press conference and the way Jericho's talking during that press conference and the way Kenny comes flying in and attacks. This has been an angle that has been built by two guys with the help of a Gato that has a solid story to it. And we don't know how the match is going to go on January 4th. I'm feeling pretty positive about it, but I've got a little trepidation with it. But at the same time, that is the match I want to see. As excited as I am to finally see Naito finally climb to that, take that next step and be where he was supposed to be. Though, then again, Okada could retain their
crazy. Oh, yeah, that's one of the crazy things about that is either guy could win.
But it just, like, with Jericho and Omega, you sit there and Jericho could win. That's not within the realm of being too crazy to happen. And as Josh has continued to beat like a dead horse and will bring up, Jericho could pop up somewhere else with that title. It just leads to so many different things, and it gets you. The biggest thing is, a lot of this stuff might not happen, but it just grabs your imagination. And as a wrestler, the one thing I always look for as a wrestling fan, the one thing that I always enjoy seeing when I go to live events, is it's really cool to see the wrestlers perform. But to me, it's always cool to see these little kids that were like me, that are at these live events, that are cheering for the Roman Reigns, the Seth Rollins, the Dean Ambrose, the Matt Hardys, the list can go on and on. But they're
enthralled. Aren't you kind of still a little kid?
Pretty much. I think I'll be a kid at heart forever, which I'm perfectly okay with. But it's having that, looking at this crazy world that we can get bogged down in such jaded tirades about stuff and question the booking and pushes, but when you see these little kids at these events that are just there and they're enjoying it, this is how I feel about Kenny versus Jericho. It's like a little kid and this dream matchup that I didn't think would happen is happening, and it's happening in New Japan. So the all bets are off on what they're going to do in ring. They're not going to be the typical kind of WWE safe. This is going to be something completely different, and it just captures my imagination, and it has me hooked. It had me hooked from the minute that vignette popped up. And I think it'll have me hooked well past that first match.
All right, let's jump to the best pay-per-view, Joel.
Best pay-per-view of the year. This one's a little trickier, because there's a lot of really good New Japan stuff. I think I'm going to go with the G1 finals, the final night where Naito won. I thought that was a really good card all around, and I really enjoyed watching that pay-per-view.
Mo?
Gee, you know, give me one second here. I have to look up which one it was. It was a ROH pay-per-view, though. But okay. G1 finals. finals, I mean, does count. Even as a pay-per-view, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, there was an ROH paper. It was the one. I'll be right back to it. Just
sure. I'm going to go. I debated doing Wrestle Kingdom 11. It was a really solid show. But then I went to the show that from the finish to the bottom of the show that I wasn't thrilled by. And it's a show that really caught me off guard. And that's NXT Houston, War Games. I thought every match in that show delivered. We had a good title match between Almos and McIntyre, which I didn't think would be that good. The women's match was really good. And you had a really fun match at the beginning. And then the matches that really stole the show, the War Game match was unbelievable. And everybody got shine. Killian Dane, Adam Cole, Eric Young, everybody that was in that match. That War Games match was nuts. And then you had what I think was one of the top categories for match of the year between Velveteen Dream and Aleister Black. It was a phenomenal pay-per-view, top to bottom, and really carried that Survivor Series week.
Okay, it was it was the Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view for me. It had a lot of great stuff on it. That's where Cody defeated Minoru Suzuki. I thought that was awesome to see Minoru Suzuki. It was the first time in 26 years he'd been in North America. Silas Young and Jay Lethal had a great match. It was just solid all the way across, right? You had the Hung Bucks beating Bully Ray and the Briscoes. That was great. Hangman Page and the Young Bucks, the Hung Bucks. And Marty Scurll versus Chucky T was an awesome match that you wouldn't think would be very good. So I just that's my favorite match. That's my favorite pay-per-view. But the takeovers are all great. Definitely the I guess it would be the one at the SummerSlam one where Dunn and Bate faced each other, isn't it?
In Chicago, I believe that one was.
Chicago was?
Yeah.
That one would be real close.
I think that's also the one that had the Gargano and Ciampa turn.
Yeah, it did, yeah. And that was a really good...
They had the credits come up, which we really could have gone for best angle as well.
Oh, you know, that was so awesome. Because that was such a terrific match, and yeah, that was great stuff.
By the way, last year, I picked NXT Toronto, Joel picked Wrestle Kingdom 10, and Mo, you picked the G1 final last year. Best promotion, it's clean sweep for New Japan. Are we just going to agree that it's going to be a clean sweep this year?
It's clean sweep for New Japan, yeah.
But I don't even think we really need to talk about it, unless Joel, you have any other...
Impact, isn't that the best promotion, guys? Come on, it's in Canada now.
What I saw from Impact, they did an okay job this year.
Who cares? Exactly. If a tree falls in a forest and nobody's there to hear, does it make a sound?
So this is an interesting category, best television show. And I'm going to let Joel lead off on this one because I know he's been going back and forth of what he wanted to do in this category.
Yeah, I've been going back and forth. It's tricky because it's not Raw. I hear that about
you.
It's not SmackDown. For me... From what I view on a regular basis, and this is what I'm basing it on, is what I view on a regular basis, it is a YouTube show, and it is called Being the Elite. I might be breaking the rules with this one, but I don't care. It's something I constantly watch. I'm excited when a new episode gets posted, and I'll watch the 12-minute episode, and I will enjoy it. I enjoy what the Bucks do. I enjoy Cody. I enjoy Kenny. I enjoy Chuck Taylor being a dick. It's, to me, when you have so much product, it stands out to me because it's something, again, it's something that's different and it's something that grabs my attention. Especially being a millennial and having such a short attention span, it's something that has me hooked.
Mo?
You know, I'm going to go with the ROH weekly television show. Because it usually, almost always entertains me. Does a great job of setting up all the angles, and is very consistent. NXT is very similar, not quite as consistent. But no question, those would be my top two. I don't really watch Being the Elite as much as I should, you know? I should probably go and binge watch some of that. But yeah, I mean, I'll go with those two. But again... probably not a coincidence that my two I'm talking about are, you know, both hour-long shows.
Yeah.
It does help. By the way, I'm going to pick SmackDown. I look forward to SmackDown. It's an easy watch. It was dwell down by who the champion was, and we'll get that in the worst of. But even despite who the champion was for a good portion of the year, you got great stuff out of Kevin and Sammy. You got great stuff out of Daniel Bryan. AJ Styles always delivered. The Usos are great. And for the most part, the women division always delivers. And it's a two-hour watch, really only an hour and a half without the commercials. I normally don't watch SmackDown until Wednesday anyways with PVR. So I'm going with SmackDown.
See,
it's a good choice.
I think my mind would have been altered if I'd watched ROH on a more weekly basis. But for me, I look at it as what am I watching right now currently? And I think that's the big thing with this. There's a lot to pick from. And Raw has 3 hours. And I have Raw on the background right now. And I don't think I've seen anything that has blown me away yet. And it's
3 hours is a killer, dude. I just can't do it regularly.
I tune in for certain things. I'm looking for certain things. Then usually I'm out and I'll catch the rest on YouTube. And if there's a match that I want to see, I'll find it on the network in like 3-4 weeks.
By the way, last year I picked SmackDown, Mo picked ROH, and Joe picked CW. So pretty much the same one. Me and Mo went the same, and Joel, you split it with being the Elite. This next award we're going to change. We had Best Mixed Martial Artist and Best Feud of the Year, but not nearly enough MMA between us this year. So we're going to go with two new categories, one that Mo suggested, and that is Breakout Superstar of 2018. So Mo, I'll let you lead the charge in this one.
Well, and I had mentioned Flip Gordon earlier, and I do think he has a chance to be a breakout star for within ROH's world, but I will go Aleister Black. I think there's another guy. He's going to be coming up to the main roster this year. When I first saw Tommy End a couple of years ago, about 3 years ago in the independents, I thought WWE should and probably will sign this guy because he's got a unique look. He's tall enough. And you know, he was a good wrestler, but it's not like most of the guys, it's not like a lot of these guys, these Adam Coles and O'Reillys and, you know, Finn Balor's and these Shinsuke, like a lot of the people they've signed who you're just like, they shouldn't even be there. They should go right to the main roster, and they're already good enough, and they're going to be huge stars. It's no problem. This is a guy who's like, okay, but he was an independent guy. He was good, fine on the independents, popular enough, but not really a huge star. And now I don't think there's any question that he's going to be a huge star in the WWE main roster. So for me, he is my pick for breakout because 2 years ago, he's pretty much come out of nowhere. My pick for a breakout star of 2018 will be Aleister Black. I think he's going to be a big star. On SmackDown is my pick.
My pick is a guy that is a current champion. He'll probably be jumping that championship in the next little bit. And he will be in NXT in the next few weeks. And he's already been a big star in the independents, but he's going to get that WWE exposure in NXT. And I just see the sky's the limit. I see this as one of the most can't-miss stars for the WWE. And they'll probably mess it up because I say that. This is one of the most can't-miss stars for the WWE in a long time. He's going to be in NXT this year, and I think he's going to have a tremendous year, and that's Ricochet. The rumors about him going to NXT have ran rampant. He's canceled pretty much all his independent bookings going into February. He'll be going to NXT along with his girlfriend Tessa Blanchard. At some point, she'll be joining. But Ricochet, to me, is the most can't-miss talent they've had in that company in a long time. I'm really excited to see what he does in NXT, and I think he will be the breakout star and champion of NXT by the end of the year.
Joe's a good one.
My breakout is someone that's already had success in WWE, but I think he has potential to be bigger than what he already is. He was once anointed the chosen one by Vince and went off to the independents because it didn't work and built himself back up and now is back. He suffered an injury, but I think for being a breakout guy that will be, I think he could be, and I'm not saying he will be, but I'm thinking he has potential to be a guy that could challenge Roman Reigns for his spot, and that's Drew McIntyre.
Good pick.
When I look at McIntyre, it's a guy that just, he has that look that Vince loves. He has that style that I think hardcore fans really like. And I think can easily get behind for casual fans. I think he's a guy that can work with almost anyone in that ring and their styles can mash. And he's not a bad promo at all. His accent's not hindering him. And he doesn't get hindered like someone else, but we're going to get to that.
We're getting very close.
And Drew McIntyre, to me, is a guy that you'd be crazy to push to the side. If he gets hot and the crowd gets behind him and you really get him going, you'd be crazy to try to derail that.
Next up is another new award that we're going to have. And this is the most surprising superstar, someone that you came into 2017, you didn't see really anything in them, and they surprised you at their performance and their level and had a better year than they thought, kind of a mid-level to jobber-level performer and really jumped, not most improved, but just surprised you by their overall performance. And Joel, you take the lead on this one.
Well, you're making me take the lead.
Well, it's your idea.
Okay. It wasn't my idea at all. It was Arbuthnot.
It was mine. For me, it would be Elias. It's a guy that I hated in NXT. I didn't see the point of it. I thought the Drifter character was really dumb, and I just didn't see it working on the main roster. I thought he would be just the guaranteed jobber in no time. I think there's really another guy, too, on here that can be named, but I'll see if you guys name him. We'll come back to him in a second. But he could have floundered on the main roster, especially in Raw, where there's the big dog and a lot of other big-time talent, and just been a consistent performer every single week. Is he ever going to get to be a world champion? Who knows in this company? But I think he's done a good job at staying in the middle. He's an okay wrestler, but he's a great performer on the mic, so I'm going with Elias Sampson. I guess he's just now Elias now. Mo?
Yeah, and I talked a lot of shit about Braun Strowman. So
yeah, you did.
Like a year ago, I was talking a lot of shit about this guy, so I would be.
You should call this award the shit sandwich award.
Yeah, I should eat a shit sandwich.
Because I did the same thing with Elias.
Yeah, oh yeah. You know, and deservedly so at the time. But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I thought this guy, I'm like, okay, well, he's limited and, you know, he'll be there. They'll push him strong for a little while and then he'll become the great Khali. Like, you know, and he's not. Like, I definitely, my shit sandwich is Braun Strowman.
Joel, who's your biggest shocker slash shit sandwich?
It would actually be a guy in NXT that I just thought, oh, they signed him because of his look, and there's nothing more to it. He'll fizzle out. We've seen them sign guys like these, and it's just never been nothing. And that's Killian Dane. I was never really big on him. I thought, eh, he'll...
Yeah, I remember even a Walk Culture, you were like, I don't get it.
Yeah. And you watch War Games, and then after that, you're like, yeah, I get it. I really, really get it. And I think he'll probably be the breakout star for Insanity when they come up to the main roster. I think he has the best potential to...
I'm going to say this about him. It's going to be really interesting when War Machine comes, because they're coming.
Yeah.
When you have Warbeard, Hanson, and him, who... have such similar looks and somewhat similar styles, it's going to be really interesting to see kind of how that plays out, I think.
I'm very interested to see how War Machine plays out in WWE and how they portray him, well, in NXT, but how that goes.
So, you know, it was really, we got one more and then we get to the fun part. So, what was the biggest story of the year, Joel?
There are two.
Last year, by the way, was a clean sweep. We all picked the UFC sale.
Yeah, well, it's huge.
There's three things that are now that pop in my head for this year.
There's one that is a more recent one that has popped in my mind that can lead into 2018 that I'm on the fence about.
Right now, the three things that come to mind for me, it's hard to pick, so I'm just going to cheat, and I'll eventually pick one. I think Vince McMahon in this XFL talk is got to be...
That was mine.
That's definitely a very, very gaining traction and somewhat scary. Vince can't be crazy enough to just go ahead and try this without a ton of research and ton of planning. Right? No? Okay.
I recently had a chance to watch back the XFL 30 for 30. And,
God,
you know, the naivety of him and being like, oh, well, it was with the WWE. That was the problem. And it was this. And just excuses after excuses. It was funny because I watched that 30 for 30 and then the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan 30 for 30. And they were just hearing the same thing from from Tonya Harding that you hear from Vince McMahon. Tonya Harding making all these excuses of why she wasn't the best skater in the world. And you hear a lot of that from Vince McMahon of reasons why the XFL didn't work. It was because of this and this. Well, now I know the reasons why to fix it.
And
I know you didn't mean to, but that was the best laugh, organic laugh I've had in a long ass time.
See, are you settling on that one, Joel?
Well, there's still two more that pop up this year.
Let's get Mo settled on one really quick, and we'll come back to you then.
No, I'm still recovering. But at least
go. I am settling on this whole Vince XFL thing because it's really bizarre. And going into 2018, it's going to be interesting with how much focus he's going to have. I mean, there's rumors too of him maybe buying the Carolina Panthers. I think would be a smarter move for Vince. You know, he's born and raised in Carolina. He knows that area. I mean, he's more of a New Yorker now, but he was born in the Carolinas. I think it's a safer choice for Vince just to buy the Carolina Panthers. But then you hear about this XFL stuff and then Donald Trump maybe being involved with it with money, how does the president get involved in it? It's the biggest story that has no, we don't know the payoff for it, but we kind of already know the payoff for it.
Here's another thought, Mo. If Vince is going to be so enthralled with this, who's going to be taking lead in WWE? Is it going to be Hunter, or is Vince going to try to do both?
He did try and do both before, and he will try and do both still, though I think Hunter would take on a slightly bigger role, which might not be for the worst. And the hubris of this man. This man doesn't know anything about football. Like, he's going to start, and he's not going to buy the Carolina. He'd be part of an ownership group to buy Carolina. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
His ego won't let him be one of, you know, X amount of people owning a group where he wouldn't have all the power to make all the decisions. So it's not going to happen. If he starts this thing back up, like you say, he doesn't know anything about football at all. Like, at all. But he thinks he can run a league. So, research. that was good. But,
get out of my
head. Honorable mention for me for story of the year is the Ric Flair thing where he almost passed away. Yeah. Because
I debated making that my best comeback.
Yeah, and that would not have been a bad choice. But that is, for me, that's an honorable mention. The biggest story for me is the rise of the independents right now. And New Japan and ROH's business being up 20%. And just in general, seeing these many companies worldwide.
You're making me change my vote. That's the right one.
I watched Okada versus, what was his name? Svale, I think was his name. From Motor City or Melbourne Championship Wrestling with this big crowd earlier today. And, you know, it's all around the world and England and just there's a rise to the independents and a momentum to them. And for me, that's so good for the performers to give them options. So that's my story of the year.
You know what, Mo? You made me change mine. I think that is the story of the year.
Yeah. Well, if this XFL thing is just rumors now, if it happens next year.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Joel?
The two tie in to kind of this independent resurgence, but I think it's the Young Bucks and their feud with WWE and the cease and desist, and just they ruffled WWE's feathers when they did their little invasion angle and did what Hunter and them did some odd years ago. Outside of WCW, they poked a bear and the bear bit back. And the other one
they assumed the bear had a sense of humor.
Because, this bear does not like sneezing.
No.
This bear does not. Have you seen the little clip from JR's book on Vince driving JR?
No.
Well, I can relay this because it's amusing. Vince is blasting AC/DC while he's driving, and he's driving like a madman. And he's dancing while he's driving, and he looks at JR and says, "I dance pretty good for a white guy." And he's driving very erratically, and JR, Vince could tell JR was uncomfortable, and he got really close to JR and told him, "Don't worry, pal, I have great peripheral vision." And that, I think that sums up Vince McMahon in a nutshell, in that vehicle, of just being a psychologist's dream to examine. Like,
so, Joel, you're going with Bucks versus WWE then for your pick?
It's kind of a mishmash of everything. I think it is the independent story. I think Mo is right. And the other thing that pops into my head and has been gaining steam for weeks now, and we'll see what happens, is Daniel Bryan's future. Is he going to be Daniel Bryan?
I think that WWE? That could be the biggest story of 2018.
Yeah. And is he Daniel Bryan, WWE performer? Or is he Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, on the independents? Because
we're gonna have to find out, man. The worst wrestler of the year. Last year I picked the Drifter, so I was wrong about that. Joel, you picked Bo Dallas, and Mo, you picked Bally.
Who?
I have B-A-L-L-I. Not sure who that is.
I have no idea either. I'd have to listen back.
Maybe I'll have to listen back on that.
You misquoted me somehow.
Maybe. So to me, there's two prime candidates in this. Who wants to have the honor of naming the wrestler, the worst wrestler of the year?
I'm going first. If this is
go ahead, Joel.
It's Jinder Mahal. I don't think it's very hard. I don't even think
I've heard
he's.
That about you.
Pardon?
I've heard that about you.
Yeah. I think that Jinder was. I think Jinder's not that great to begin with in ring. I mean, we were talking about him hurting Finn when they wrestled, and then him getting a push and winning the championship. Like 3 weeks after that whole thing happened, he was put in a spot that he shouldn't have been, and it made his flaws shine even brighter than what I think they did when he was just a lowly, lower mid-card guy. It's Jinder Mahal. He's the 50th WWE champion, but AJ Styles is 2-0 against him, so I think that's the victory for all of us.
Mo?
Yeah, I mean, he's terrible. I mean, the guy's terrible. So, but you know what? If you're actually talking just like worst wrestler, which is what the category is, there are people worse than him. Not people who got the push that he got who are worse than him, but there are people worse than him. So I don't really know that I consider it necessarily his fault that he got the push that these people didn't get. But, I mean, the actual worst wrestler is Dana Brooke. But
well,
if you're
gonna
looking,
be female. We're going to get female, so...
Okay, but if you're looking for, the worst wrestler who is...
Male.
Yeah, male and for the level that he was put at, I mean, it's hard not to go with him.
So you're going to go with Jinder as well?
Yeah.
I think Jinder is a really good point. I think he didn't really show much improvement on the mic or anything like that. But to me, he got to be... His feuds weren't mind-numbingly terrible.
Oh, yes, and they were.
They were bad.
Fuck off.
They were bad. Don't get me wrong. They were bad. But he wasn't in two of the worst feuds, not only this year, but in the history of the company, which was Bray Wyatt, who was involved in the terrible feud with Randy Orton that somehow Randy escaped and is now just getting over. Randy took the entire year to try to get over that, and then just completely obliterating Finn Balor and bringing him down to a level that I don't know if Finn will ever recover from, and just having shit match after promo that you want to wash over your face over and over again, and having just terrible matches. So for me, the worst of the year is Bray Wyatt. It was just, Jinder was not good, but there was one or two things I'm like, okay, I don't hate that. I don't love it, but I don't hate it. Every time Bray Wyatt came on my television, I wanted to throw something at it.
Yeah. I can't deny.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about Bray is he's not as bad as Jinder.
But yeah, he's in ring, he's not as bad. It's just the accomplishment of the year of what he represented this year was not good.
No, yeah, he's booked even worse.
Yeah.
Because he is he's the biggest example of why Aleister Black could be a failure. You know what I mean? Like, they could just easily take this guy, and that is anybody who's very talented, and Bray Wyatt's a talented guy, and to over-create with him. And that's his, they're too creative with him. And it's just silly and stupid and often awful. So,
female wrestler of the year, Mo, you already picked it with Dana Brooke. Ellie, you have a rant on that. Joel, who's your worst female of the year?
It's Dana Brooke. They don't even let her wrestle anymore. The company has her managing Titus and Apollo. There's a reason why she's not wrestling in the ring anymore. It didn't. Yeah,
or Lana wrestle either. But Dana Brooke is shittier.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, she was Hunter's fetish, and that just didn't work. And now I think she's in a role that she can be successful in, so that's good for her, but she's just not meant to be.
You know, I got to say this, because you say she was Hunter's fetish, but I was down when it was when Sting took on Triple H. I went to that WrestleMania. What was that, 32?
31.
I can't even remember. But down there was both I think Dana had been on television like once. And I'm not sure, or maybe, and you know, Alexis Bliss like once or twice. Like, they both basically, nobody knew who they were, and they were down there, and they were beside each other by a hotel. We were walking by, and some of the wrestlers were coming out, and they came out, and everybody runs towards the two of them because they could see that they were WWE, and they were coming out of the WWE place, but they didn't know who they were. And Dana gets down, and all these girls come up to her, and she's talking to them all and signing the autographs, and Alexa Bliss is there trying to fit in and not knowing how to handle the crowd and handle the autographs, and she doesn't seem to have the charisma and the look and everything, and you're like, oh, I got it there, Dana Brooke over Alexa Bliss at the time, and now look at them. It's unbelievable. So that's just
That's a great story. I think Dana Brooke is right. It's hard. Lana is a good one. I look at someone too, though, like a Sonya Deville. And that's why she's my pick, because she's so bad on the mic. Actually, we're going to get to my worst on the mic pretty soon here. Sonya Deville is one of those people I picked. She's not my pick. I have my pick. Sonya Deville, just for the place that she is not ready for where she's supposed to be. It's kind of a Dana Brooke situation. She's not very good on the mic, and she's very sloppy in the ring. But my worst of the year, Dana Brooke is terrible. She's not good. But mine is Sarah Logan, who is green, and I just am not impressed with anything I've seen with her so far. And I may come back to her in a little bit.
She, you know what? If you saw her on The Independence as Crazy Mary Dobson, you'd realize that she's not that bad.
I'm sure she's not, but just with the small sample size I've had on SmackDown, not great.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues there, and it's partially them and partially her, but she's not as, I mean, I'm not saying she's a bad pick, but I will say that it's a little bit unfair to judge based on just probably what you've seen so far.
All right. I will give her a year, and I will go with Dana Brooke.
But it's not necessarily going to get any better. I mean, you know, I mean, Bayley's, I mean, I'm not saying give her a year. I mean, Bayley a year ago was better off than she is now. They're, yeah, like you could have picked her. Somebody could have picked her for worst wrestler, worst female wrestler, yeah. And I would not have argued.
I'm going to go with Dana Brooke. You did convince me of it with that story, but those are Sonya Deville and Sarah. I just look at people that are in the spots right now. Worst tag team of the year. I'm kind of, you know, I think in a way we may have to eat a little bit of a shit sandwich on this. We had a clean sweep of Authors and Pain last year.
Oh, wow. Really? Yeah, I think we do have to
Clean Sweep of Offensive Pain last year for
Oklahoma. They've improved an awful lot. So that's embarrassing.
Worst take team is kind of hard for me. I don't really know what direction to go in. So, Mo, I'm going to throw you the ball.
Nobody's really all that shitty.
No.
You know what? I'm going to go back and change my... Because you had Jinder as the worst wrestler of the year. And I said Jinder, but now that I think about it, I can't call them the worst tag team of the year because the other guy's so good and because the angles and stuff wasn't that bad. But, man, is anybody lazier in the planet than Dean Ambrose?
Yep, thank you.
Like,
Dean is your worst wrestler of the year?
I mean, I could put Dean as worst wrestler of the year because Jinder Mahal, like, he wasn't good and they asked too much of him.
Yeah.
But Dean Ambrose is good. They ask a lot of him, and he just doesn't give a shit enough to really, really try, it feels
so
like.
So are you going to break news here?
Yeah, I'm breaking. I'm going to Dean Ambrose.
I like it.
Dean Ambrose. I remember one time somebody did the Irish whip into the corner. He runs to the corner, slows down to almost nothing, jumps up on like the second turnbuckle, waits there for half a second, turns around like he's bored as hell, and then ducks the other guy's clothesline, looks so phony and fake, dialing it in. Yeah. So, how about that, guys?
Well done, sir.
How about that?
Done. As far as
worst tag team, I'm going to go Breezango. Because, I'm sorry, dudes. It went on way too long for me. Way too long. I couldn't take it anymore. It was amusing a few times, and then it went forever, and it was maybe the worst angle of the year. I mean, no payoff to this backstage stuff. So, yeah.
Joel?
I don't know. This is tough. The tag team stuff is always tough.
Really tough. Like, there's no bad, super bad tag teams this year. Like,
no.
I'm just going to go with an easy one, and I'm just going to pick the Ascension.
Yeah, that's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Going for low-hanging fruit.
Low-hanging fruit. I mean, they're entertaining with the Breezango stuff, but, I mean, they don't add anything to the product. They're not they're not really good in ring. They're funny when they're on.
Surprisingly.
Yeah. And you know, Victor, you know, being a Calgarian, want to root for Victor. He's had a really good story of how he became a wrestler, sleeping in his car and all that, but there's other guys that have that story as well. I mean, look at TJP. Who? Yeah, I don't know who he is either anymore. So, yeah, I'm just going to go with the Ascension by default. Actually, no. I know who my worst tag team of the year is. It's Heavy Machinery. Stupidest name. 80s bullshit cliche team. And we've seen those 80s bullshit. Even the Bludgeon Brothers have kind of surprised me what they've been. War Machine is a stupid kind of 80s tag team idea. But Heavy Machinery is, they're just so, they're not good. They're really bad.
No. Well, okay, they're not a great team, but
no.
But what's his name? Drozovic?
Not sure.
Yeah. No, the one guy's tall and he's bland and he's boring.
Yeah.
The other guy's short and he's not boring at all and he's awesome. And that's Drozovic. Yeah. He's awesome. So he's awesome.
He may be good. They just haven't surprised
him. It's just such a unique look and, you know, weights and stakes and I don't know. I get a kick out of them. At least
I would like
me laugh.
To see him as maybe a singles wrestler. Maybe he could do what Killian Dane has done, but they have not stood out to me. Every time I have them on NXT, I want to switch the channel. They're just such a boring, lame tag team. Joel?
I really don't know who to pick for this. Like, it's... I'm just trying to think here of teams that have just been bad. And I'm not talking jobber teams.
Any team that's terrible this year. I mean, a lot of them are NXT teams, too. Like that Tino Sabatelli.
Yeah.
Their tag team's not great either. That's another
pick. They both bore me, but it's kind of like...
They're green, though. That's why I kind of gave them a break.
Yeah.
You could say the same thing for Heavy Machinery. They've just been on the roster a little longer, so that's why I went with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Tino, I think he's like 36 or something like that, amazingly.
Yeah, he was on that NXT kind of, not the 30 for 30, but they kind of that Hard Knock show they had.
Yeah.
TikTok, Joel.
I don't know. I have no answer.
So we'll just put the Ascension down?
It's not a bad pick. Is he just going with Ascension or what?
Yeah. I don't know. Okay,
yeah,
sure.
Just go with the Ascension.
Sure. Next up, worst on the mic. That is where I'm going to go with Sarah Logan. That promo she cut with the three of them against Daniel Bryan was Scott Steiner level. And I know the accent plays tough into that, but you're called to the main roster. You're expected to perform. And she's had two times now where it's incoherent of what she's saying. And she may be really good, and I could eat a shit sandwich, but it was Scott Steiner level, I don't know what the hell you're talking about bad.
It was pretty bad. I mean, yeah. I mean, can't say it isn't. Yeah. It's pretty bad.
Mo, do you have someone in mind?
The worst on the mic for me is Baron Corbin.
That's a pretty good pick. That's a pretty damn good pick.
It is a good pick because, he just says nothing. Like, he sounds so bored and phony and just, reading lines with no emotion and just,
And then you see him on Talking Smack and he was so good.
Yeah, much better. What an excellent example of somebody who's better on Talking Smack. But, I think he's just so bad. So, yeah, he's my pick. He's my pick.
Joel?
My pick is based on the amount of promo time this person gets, the amount of screen time this person typically gets, and the fact that they can't help get things over. They just bury the things around them, and it's Stephanie McMahon.
Oh, she's the shits.
When she doesn't help carry a story forward, she hinders the story. She stops it from moving forward. A lot of her stuff, I find, is very self-serving. It does.
By the way, repeat winner for Joel. Joel picked Steph last year. Mo picked Shane, and I picked Titus. But continue.
She doesn't do anything to benefit the product. She hurts it more than helps it.
She doesn't understand the psychology of the product very well at all.
No.
Which is really hilarious, all things considered.
And she's not even been on TV that much this year.
No, she hasn't. That's probably why I didn't think about her. But she is terrible. I'm surprised somebody didn't go with Bray, by the way.
I thought about Bray, and Bray was my pick, but then Sarah Logan, when she was on, I was like, what are you talking about?
That's fair.
Phone. Yeah.
That's fair.
Most underutilized performer. Last year I picked Curtis Axel, Joel picked Neville, and Mo picked Samoa Joe. I think all those guys had pretty good years.
Yeah.
Even Curtis Axel has kind of found his niche at least now.
Well, at least he has a role.
Yeah, he found his niche, which is all I wanted. I thought he was a talented guy that could at least be a mid-carder and find his niche, and he did. And Samoa Joe had a great year.
Excellent year. And Samoa Joe is the guy who elevated himself.
For me, for most underutilized talent, there's two. It's just I talked about Ricochet being a can't miss, and I've gone back and forth on this being a can't miss, and I think one's a female one and one's a male one, and I'd like to go with either or of them, but to me it's Finn Balor. This guy is just way too talented in the ring, on the microphone, to be where he is right now, to not be quote-unquote over. It's pretty ridiculous that he's stuck in that feud with Bray and now having to do some rehab. And it looks like he's going to be doing a feud with The Miz, which maybe that can lead him back. This is a guy that coming into WrestleMania, we should be talking about being a Royal Rumble winner, and we're not. Talking about being in one of the top main event spots, and we're not. Finn Balor has just been so poorly used, and he has so much stuff that you can market and use for him. It's really sad that he's at the state he is right now. Coming after WrestleMania, we thought, oh, this is a guy, first Universal Champion, he'll be back with the title by the end of the year, and I don't know what the future holds for Finn Balor, so I'm going with Finn Balor. Joel?
It's Balor. This is a guy that should be in a much better spot than what he is, but he's not. And part of the reason is because he's on Raw, and there's only one project that matters on Raw. There is only one guy that is the all-important guy of getting over and protecting and making sure he is the top dog of Monday Night Raw. And I find Balor, like a couple other people, I think Miz should potentially have a Universal title run, but he's not. Because, again, everything has gone to Roman. And Finn just has, I think the injury hurt him in Vince's eyes. I think Vince looks at him as injury prone and just cooled off on him and just going to leave Finn where he is.
Mo.
Yeah, Finn's an excellent choice. I mean, I am going to go Ty Dillinger.
Good pick.
You know, Shinsuke is another guy that I think was underutilized this year, but I don't think will be in 2018. So
I don't think so either.
So I'm not going to go with him. I think Ty Dillinger is a guy just as, I mean, like Mike Bennett's not even on TV. So, I mean,
yeah, and I mean, the story you could tell with him is unbelievable.
The rehab thing obviously didn't help that. But
do you think they're just waiting now for Maria to have the baby to bring them back now?
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's very strange. But yeah, I mean, let's go Ty Dillinger because we know how good he is. We saw how over he was. You guys were there in Toronto.
Oh my God.
I'm not saying that he's like, you know, world title guy, but he should be on TV every week. He should be in the mix and be used. And he's usually forgotten about until he's put in a U.S. title tournament that, and nobody believes he has a shot in it.
Good point. I also would have said too, for most underutilized performer, Bayley, just because that's another. How do you mess that up? I don't understand. It was a female John Cena.
You'd have to be really shitty at your job to mess that up.
And
yeah. So, makes sense, now, doesn't it?
Yeah. Worst gimmick of the year, Mo.
Worst gimmick of the year.
Whew. Last year, Joel and I picked Darren Young, and you picked the Cabinet.
Yeah, the Cabinet was awful. I don't know what the worst gimmick is. Give me, come back to me, please.
Joel, do you have an idea?
Well, it almost happened. It didn't, but it still is. It's Sister Abigail.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It is.
I don't think wow, any, I think yeah, we can, I think I can say Sister Abigail, and I don't have to say anything else.
Nope. You know, even without happening, it was the worst gimmick of the year. You're right. Like,
yeah,
how can you, like, how is that possible? That something that we actually never see on TV is unquestionably the worst thing, the worst gimmick of the year. We don't even know what it is. Here's the thing. Here's why it's the worst gimmick. Because you know they're still going to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, well, not with Finn. But you know Matt. That somebody has that. Yeah, maybe Matt's, maybe somebody. You know somebody got that, you know, that idea in their mind, and nothing in the world is going to keep them from doing it. Nothing. Because that's how they are, you know? Yeah, that's an excellent pick.
I had some other stuff in mind, but I think Joel, you really, it was only on TV for a brief second, but wow, that's a very good pick. I think you got the clean sweep with that one. Worst match of the year. I would kind of be shocked if this isn't the clean sweep, but I'm going to go with it. Start off with there, and I'm going to say the House of Horrors match. That was just one of the dumbest things I've ever seen.
Was that this year?
It was this year. It could have been really creative, and it wasn't. It was just a piece of shit.
So bad.
Yeah.
So bad.
That happened this year.
It did happen this year. We've all erased it from our minds, and we have to bring it back for the worst.
And I'm going Punjabi prison.
Okay.
I know you weren't going probably to me next, but I'm going Punjabi prison. But it's the same idea, isn't it? It's them again. It's them with Bray Wyatt or Jinder, whoever it is, that it's them being too creative and coming up with these things and not just doing what we praise New Japan for doing. It is putting two guys out there who can really work. Let them have a good hard hitting match that we'll all talk about. Like, it was brutal.
And by the way, before we get to you, Joel, last year I picked the Ambrose Asylum. You picked Brock and Dean, and Mo, you picked Taker and Shane.
That was brutal.
Joel, what's your worst match of the year?
worst match of the year is the House of Horrors. I completely forgot it existed. And that was, what, 11 minutes? Crowd was chanting boring while it was playing.
I was drunk and that match was still bad. I would just say that. That match should be at least entertaining if you're intoxicated. And it still really just got a lot of anger out of me.
Because it sucked.
Yeah. It wasn't good. Worst feud of the year? Joel.
Bray versus Finn.
Okay. Mo?
Well, I mean, I think the one that annoys me the most is Shinsuke versus Jinder. Because of the promo stuff that Jinder cut on him.
Mm-hmm.
That was really, really bothered me and still does.
Super so racist.
I think I'm going to go, yeah, that stuff. I'm going to go with that. That said, I think Bray versus Orton was worse in a lot of ways, but it didn't offend me as much.
That's mine. Because Randy and Bray, you had the buildup. If we would have gone into 2017, we're like, the buildup of this is actually well done. I remember Joel and I leaving Survivor Series, like, they've done a really good job building up this Bray and Randy thing. Like, when they do the feud, it's going to be really fun because they've done a good job of putting Randy and the Wyatts, and then it led to the House of Horrors, Randy coming down in a sperm at WrestleMania. the random thing of setting fire to the house and burning Sister Abigail. Like, it was just some
The
dumb.
Maggots in the ring, you know what? The first time they did it, I thought, that's good. Then they did it twice more. I thought, Jesus, come on, guys.
Yeah. So now we're to the shit of the shit, and I'm assuming a lot of this is going to be New Japan, for sure, this part. The worst angle of the year. Who wants the honors in this one?
Worst angle?
Worst angle. I have the one I remember that there's a lot. You can go back to some Bray stuff and some Jinder stuff, but there's one, I'll lead it off, I guess. There's one to me that was just so unnecessary, and it did such a job of burying an athlete in the company that they haven't recovered from, and it was This Is Your Life by Alexa Bliss to Mickie James. It just...
Oh, Mickie James.
Or Bayley.
Bayley.
Yeah, it was totally unnecessary, and Bayley has not recovered from it since, and it was one of the worst Raw segments I've seen in a long time.
It was bad.
Joel or Mo?
I don't disagree.
Is that what you're going to go with?
Yeah.
Mo?
You know, I generally think of something that is about to do money and they blow it on as a you know, bad, worst angle. I mean, I'll say, I mean, it's really tough to top that one because it was a horrible segment. And it was, but I do think that at the end of the day, I think that burning the house down by Orton is worse.
Yeah, that was bad.
You know, I just think that was just so bad. So bad.
But, by the way, last
year, I know we already did worst match, but can I just say most disappointing match? Is that a category?
Not yet, but you can say it.
Yeah, most disappointing, wasn't that Braun versus Brock?
Yeah. Because
the angles had been fantastic, and then the match just didn't do anything. And after the four-way match had been so good at SummerSlam, too, and the angles had been so fantastic, that's the most disappointing match of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. By the way, last year, worst angle, I just had James Ellsworth, period. Joel had Sasha Banks' fake retirement. Yeah, and Mo, you had the Wyatts versus the New Day. So all was really good picks last year. Worst pay-per-view of the year? I had Bound for Glory.
Wait.
Joel had WrestleMania 32.
You skipped over the worst match.
I did. I did skip over that. So let's go to that.
No, worst match. You didn't do yours. I did Punjabi Prison and...
Yeah, we did worst match, Joel.
Yeah.
House of Horrors.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Worst pay-per-view?
WrestleMania.
Really? I thought WrestleMania was good this year.
Any of these events that are 17 hours long for WWE just kills me. And I don't know. I don't know.
I think it delivered as far as was like, for me, my worst show is Battleground, where nothing delivered.
Well, I suppose, but I don't know. Early on, you had the AJ versus Shane match, and it kind of quality-wise peaked right there. That was really early.
Jericho KO wasn't what we thought it could be.
Wasn't as good as we expected, and that KO, I mean, those 360, oh, that KO's three, Kevin Owens 365 was awesome. Like those, you know, and we never did best individual promo of the year, did we, from the last show?
We didn't. You know what's funny?
You know what it was? It was the night after WrestleMania with Goldberg.
That was
came out on the network, and the fans are chanting at him, and he goes, "This isn't part of your entertainment program. If you could all just shut up and let me talk," and everybody did. And
that was great. It was
great.
But, you know, yeah, I mean, bring up WrestleMania 33, and what you will remember from this WrestleMania, I think you remember the good Brock and Goldberg match.
Yeah, I like that.
This will be remembered as the Hardys' return, and I think in the long term, this will be remembered as a proposal, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I didn't care about that. In fact, I didn't even see it.
Yeah, so that's going to be when people look back, is maybe what they're going to
remember. I suppose.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, I mean, the Brock definitely and Goldberg, but I mean, I don't know. It's such a long event, and just... How many times is Reigns going to be given the ball at the end of WrestleMania? Like, I just can't take it one more time. And I'm going to get it one more time.
Yep. Sure are, pal. I'm picking Battleground. I think that's self-explanatory, Joel.
I'm trying to remember what show it was, but there was a show that a pay-per-view that I watched for WWE that I was just miserable the whole way through. It was flat from, you know what it was? Survivor Series.
That was a very infuriating show. I'm going to change my pick, Joel. That's a good pick.
Minus AJ.
Survivor Series was really bad. That's actually better than my pick.
Yeah, do you want to change, Mo?
Yeah, I got to change to that.
Yeah, now I'm changing mine too.
Well, WrestleMania sticks out more because your expectations are higher.
For sure.
Actually, I looked at most of these matches going into this and thought, well, that should be a good match. And then they were sucky. And that main event and the way they booked it.
Like, at least, like I said, at WrestleMania, the Goldberg and Brock match was fun. AJ and Cena was fun. KO and Jericho wasn't great, but it's still a quality match. You got the return of the Hardys. There was some quality stuff from WrestleMania. Where Survivor Series, I don't really know anything that stood out. And this is something that
has shadow.
Yes, it was really long. And then the main event there, you thought, oh, this is the chance for Bobby Roode and Nakamura and all these guys to get a chance, and it's time to play the game, is what happened.
Yeah. So that was shit. Thanks.
Good pick, Joel. Very good pick. Where's promotion, guys? Joel?
It's WWE. There is no expectations for Impact, and Impact is a afterthought. WWE is supposed to be the pinnacle of professional wrestling. It is supposed to be the spot where you have WrestleMania moments, where you have career-defining matches, where you have programs that you talk about 10 years down the line, and they just fail at most, if not all of those, on a constant basis. We talk about consistency with WWE. They're consistently struggling to make new stars. They're consistently struggling to offer me a product that I can watch for two to three hours and enjoy it. It should just be an hour. That being said, the gym is always going to be a thing like NXT, but you can have a little bit of gold, but the rest of the thing is crap a good 80% of the time. I mean, I'm thankful that we have a guy like AJ Styles, Sami Zayn, Daniel Bryan. And there's a few other guys that make it easier to watch. But as a whole, I have expectations with WWE. And they are not meeting my expectations. That is why I'm watching New Japan. Because I need something else. Or I would not be watching wrestling. Because this would just be too hard.
Mo.
Well, I mean, and I understand what you're saying about WWE. I feel like WWE this year was better than last year. I do. I feel like SmackDown evened out. I feel like they did a better job promoting things. So I feel like they were better. I mean, it's just the problem is nothing feels important. And when you watch that Pete Dunne versus Tyler Bate, and you think, you know, a guy puts there's a point where he puts Dunne puts him in the triangle, and then he's punching him from the bottom like he would in a real fight. And then in the WWE, you would just stop and sell it and try and sell to get to the ropes, and it doesn't feel real. And it gets highlighted, and that's the problem with the WWE for me. But I don't feel like it was terrible. I just feel like it just doesn't have any momentum. It's treading water. Whereas TNA, you say they're irrelevant, but that's the whole point. They're relevant. 5 years ago, they were not competition, but they were relevant. 8 years ago, they were feeling like they were about to become competition. And now they're irrelevant. We don't even think about them. To me, that's the worst promotion. Even if they do better, it's a worse promotion because they are ground to the dust to the point that they'll never be irrelevant again.
My pick is a very controversial pick, so bear with me. Mine isn't WWE or TNA, it's the UFC. For the sole reason that they've done a terrible job of building stars. This is a company that their biggest star had a boxing match this year. They lost their biggest female star. You know, Demetrius Jackson is a great MMA fighter, but they have no stars, and they fell symptom to what happened to the WWE, where the best thing the UFC had for a while was less was more, and instead they went was more is more, where there's always a UFC event. It used to be such a big buildup of every once in a while you'd have that big match of an Ortiz and a Chuck Liddell or Ken Shamrock and Ortiz or the big GSP fight, and they got their big GSP fight, and now he's out already due to health concerns, but they have not done a good job of building up stars. A few years ago, you could have named 10, the casual UFC fan could have named 10 people in the UFC that have a big match and you're ready to go. Now, who can you really name as a casual UFC fan that you want to go see? To the point that we couldn't even do an award this year because the UFC just didn't draw this year. It didn't engage, it didn't bring in. The biggest match they had was the GSP match, and it was fun and it was exciting, and they had some good cards, don't get me wrong, but they've done such a piss poor job at drawing in stars, and Dana has taken attention away from focusing on Conor with his boxing stuff and other avenues, and that's why I got the UFC as my worst promotion of the year.
No, you nailed it on that, though. No question about that. Everything you said is right.
It was tough because it was a great promotion, but like, what are we looking for? You're even John Jones, and you can go through that avenue again, and then they're kind of falling to the WWE thing. It's like, oh, well, John Jones comes back, or when GSP comes back, or G Will occurs when Brock Lesnar comes back. It's falling to what WWE fell into for the longest time there, and WWE has done a good job of building
what,
up stars.
What they've really become is they've become a promotion that is closer to what, you know, your Pride or Risen in Japan is, where their freak show matches, like the idea of Brock versus John Jones, draws more than your championships, which,
or the Floyd and Connor match we may get in the UFC, which
exactly.
is stupid.
Yeah, but those are freak show matches, right? And that's what they've become. You know, they don't know how to promote the belts or the individuals very well. So when they can just promote something that's wacky, and you can only that's not going to happen very often. So I mean, I don't think you'll ever see Floyd and Connor in the UFC, but
I hope
you never
not.
Do say never, sense. But yeah.
The worst television show, Mo.
Worst television show?
Yeah.
Well, it's Raw.
Yeah.
Like, it was Raw. I believe it was Raw last year, wasn't it?
I did WWE Storytime, and then you and Joel did Raw.
Yeah. It is Raw. It's 3 hours. It's, you know, twice as long as it needs to be. I usually, when I watch it, I usually try and figure out how much wrestling I've seen. And it usually comes in at about 50 minutes.
Yeah.
And the episodes where they have more wrestling are usually the ones that I enjoy, but those are rare. So sometimes they'll come in at like 80 minutes of wrestling, and I'm like, oh, that was a good show. But most of the time, they have like 50 minutes of wrestling, you know? SmackDown will have like 40 minutes and be like, you know, an hour, not an hour less long. So, you know, and it'll be like 30 minutes on ROH, and it's only an hour. So that's my problem with WWE. It's just, that's why Raw, it's, and it trained me like that too. Like when I watch it on the PVR, I'm skipping through the commercials. I'm skipping through the backstage segments for the most part. I'm skipping through I'm just waiting for the in-ring interviews. I'm just skipping through the actual matches. So they've taught me they aren't that important.
Yeah.
That anything that I need to watch is it happens in-ring on the mic.
I mean, even you look at a match, Raw's my worst as well. You look at a match with Cesaro and Roman, which was apparently really good, but I'm just so used to being like, this match means nothing. Why would I care?
Exactly. So, I mean, a good match isn't enough to get me to stop anymore on Raw because of the way they've conditioned me. So that's a really bad sign.
Joel, you going to get the clean sweep here?
Raw is when I take my naps. If I'm not working, at different points, I will take my nap during Monday Night Raw. And I don't miss a darn thing.
So there you go. That is the 2017 year in review, best and worst. It was a really good year. I'm not going to write these down, but who is someone that nobody's thinking about that you think has a chance to break out this year? We talked about, you know, the Ricochets and the McIntyres and Aleister Black. Those are guys that, you know, we can see
somebody people have never even heard of that could be.
Even that you see, like, sitting there, it could be a tag team as well that you just kind of see sitting there and have a chance. Like, I really think Chucky T and Trent Beretta can have a really big year as a tag team, for example.
They could. It's interesting because, I mean, yeah, they're kind of too big for the junior division. I don't know where they're going to – in ROH, do you think, or New Japan? Or
I think they have a big feud with them against the Bucks. I think that'll be the Bucks' next big feud is them.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be. If you're asking me who's the guy, I mean, I would say Jeff Cobb is the guy who this year it will become to all wrestling fans instead of just the hardcores, will become the guy that is really known in the independents that everybody's talking about. So that would be the guy I would pick.
Joel, you got anybody?
I think the one guy to really keep your eye on this year, he won the NXT title, but I think his ceiling is higher than what maybe some people expect, and I think that's almost...
Yeah, it's a good pick.
I think Johnny's going to have a good year. I think his feud with Ciampa is going to be really good. And I have...
When is Ciampa back?
March, but I do...
So probably Mania, that feud.
I would not be shocked if Ciampa cost Gargano his title shot.
Yeah.
I don't see them putting the title on Johnny, but I think that having Ciampa cost him just is going to build the hatred towards Ciampa. And there's a lot of hatred towards Ciampa. I think a guy like... another guy like we keep talking about, and I think this will be the year that he probably lands at a bigger promotion, is Matt Riddle. I don't think he goes to New Japan.
I don't think he will. I think he might end up in New Japan, but I think he likes his independence an awful lot.
I do not think he ends up in New Japan because of his marijuana use, because of how strict Japan is.
That's actually true.
Good point.
That stopped Matt Sydal in his tracks in New Japan.
They're very different. Yeah, very different culture when it comes to that. That particular herb.
Lars Sullivan, I think, could
have. That's someone I was bringing up. And you know, Lars Sullivan is a good pick. I got to say too, like, we never got to talk about him, but I think Jason Jordan's gonna have a really big year. I've really liked everything from Jason Jordan, and I don't think he didn't really hit anything on any of these awards, but I really like his promos. And
I'm going to go back to this. WrestleMania 31, it was the NXT. This was the last NXT that they did before a major show that wasn't televised.
Yeah.
And being there and watching Jason Jordan, who had just split up with his tag team partner, I can't remember who it was at the time.
Ty Dillinger.
Yeah, it was Ty Dillinger. Yeah, and they were just getting a heel push. And he was wrestling, I don't even remember who he was wrestling, but the chance of Let's Go Jobber to him. And now you see him a few years later, and it's crazy. I can't, when I see him, I still can't get the Let's Go Jobber chance out of my head.
Funny.
But, well, and it was funny. But yeah, no, Ty Dillinger's, Jason Jordan. But I still look at them, and I'm looking at... you know, Chad Gable and how great he's wrestling right now. And I'm like, he's still the more talented of the two.
And then we're going to play the return game really quick here.
Wait. There's one other guy we didn't mention at all that I think next year is going to be a lot better. He's number one in merch sales. So he's ahead of the Shield. Keep that in mind. Huh. He's head of the Shield, and every day is this day, it's Rusev Day. And I think 2018 is going to be Rusev
Year. If they were so not so stupid, I would agree with you. If they would just turn this guy babyface and make some money, because it's been obvious for like 2 years that he should go babyface. But even a year ago, he's doing really well feuding with Reigns. And, you know, when he came back from this injury and he was going to challenge Jinder, you thought, you know, it looked like it was going to be there. Like, looked like he was, and then they changed their mind. Man, they got to get on the Rusev train, because he's likable, he's charismatic, he's a good wrestler, he's funny, he's money.
Yeah. I'll tell you a story about Rusev, Joe, Mo. I told Joe the story already off air. So my sister, she's not the biggest wrestling fan in the world, and her husband watch Total Divas. That's how they get their reaction in, and her husband doesn't pay full attention. When Rusev came on the screen, he just fell in love with him, just from Total Divas, because of the – he's like, this guy just has so much charisma. He's like, it's impossible to hate this guy. And then I was able to show them some of the stuff that Rusev had done on main WWE programming, but just even from his appearances on Total Divas – he's taking people that don't know anything about the product and getting them to engage and care about him.
And the Rusev Day thing's hilarious. And you see, and Aiden English all of a sudden feels like, I mean, he's still a jobber, but he
great
feels
year
like
for him, by the way, great year for him.
Yeah, he had a really good comeback. Oh yeah,
he did.
Could have been.
He did. He could. And I was someone to consider for comeback.
And another name to mention, and just being, they've had. One of the better builds in WWE, and WWE really has nothing to do with this. Xavier Woods versus Aiden English in the US tournament. There's been promos back and forth between the two of them on Twitter.
He had a blue pants promo.
Yeah. And it's
he had
just
a blue pants promo?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's just such an easy thing. And the fact that Xavier Woods found out he was in this tournament via social media, again, is a testament to WWE and the quality. And you look at that, and you look at, it's just simple little things like that that have helped elevate guys all around. And I think that's a nod to guys to kind of go, okay, let's, you know, I might not be getting the script that I want, or might not be able to say what I want because I'm not getting the time, but I've got this little gadget in my pocket that I can use that you have to be careful, because as we've discussed on the podcast, Vince is very petty, but sometimes it's worth a risk, because if you can sit there and enjoy catering all you want, but sometimes you got to take a shot.
Okay. So we're going to do one last segment, then we're going to get out of here.
One word I just want to say to Joel about what he just said. Two words. Zack Ryder.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Zack Ryder. Get yourself over. It doesn't matter if they don't get you over.
Okay, so I'm going to name a few guys, and you just tell me if you think that they will be back in the WWE next year. So let's start off with one that we heard a few rumors about, and that's big old Dave Bautista.
No.
Yes.
Mo?
Mo says yes. I said yes, yeah.
Not in a wrestling format, but Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Wrestling format and on TV, The Rock. Then it wasn't on television at all last year.
Yes.
Yes.
Rob Van Dam.
No.
No.
Okay. Another big one that we got. Well, there's always the big one, so let's just throw it out there to see if the double no. CM Punk.
Nope.
No, that's not the big one.
Hulk Hogan.
That's the big one.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's happening at the Raw 25th anniversary.
And I think he may be having a match at WrestleMania.
No.
No.
He's not.
I don't know, man.
He will turn into dust, and all that will be left of Hulkamania is a mustache and a bandana and the dust of where he landed. His hip cannot survive. His back cannot survive. His joints cannot survive. I don't think his mustache could survive a bump. I could probably just survive taking a wrestling bump. There's no way Hulk Hogan could survive a bump. So he should
no chance.
No.
So then I asked you the question with the big rumor is, oh, and the last one is, do we see the there's two last ones. Do we see the Undertaker return and wrestle this year?
It's certainly looking like him and Cena suddenly.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, possibility. Who do you guys think the Cena opponent is at WrestleMania?
Well, it's supposed to be somebody big, right? It's supposed to be somebody who would be bigger than a world title match, which leaves two people. That leaves, well, three people. CM Punk, Taker, and Hogan, Like, it's a very limited...
Goldberg's another name I've heard, but I'm not too excited by that.
I suppose it's possible. It's possible.
I'll leave on this then with these last two predictions and the big one. So, three things here. Number one, well, I guess there's four. Mo, and then Joel, and then I'll go. Who wins the Royal Rumble? Mo?
I no longer know, because I thought it was going to be Shinsuke.
That's what I'm sticking with Shinsuke, but I'm a little more eerie on it.
It's really tough because is it going to be, are Shinsuke and AJ going to face for the title? Because then it's got to be him.
That's what I'm staying with. That's been my pick since the summertime, so I'm staying with that, but I'm getting a little wary of that now.
Yeah, because, you know,
it could be random. Kinda,
God. Could be. I don't know. It's because we know that Reigns is, you know, obviously facing Brock.
Yeah.
So that means that puts him in the contenders. They have the elimination.
That's why I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah, but they've never done that with the elimination chamber. I don't know. If I'm going to pick, the Royal Rumble winner. I'm going to pick Vince McMahon.
God damn it. Joe, who do you got?
John Cena or Roman Reigns. It's going to be one of the two. I think now.
Vince McMahon, John Cena, and Shinsuke Nakamura. Who wins the Women's Royal Rumble? Mo?
Vince McMahon.
Santina Marella.
And by the way, Vince, I'm not saying Vince. I'm not actually saying Vince for the other one.
I know.
I will go Shinsuke.
Okay.
But women. The women's one, I'm going to go Asuka.
Okay, Joel?
Santina Marella.
I'm going to say Ronda Rousey wins that one.
I think in all seriousness, I think it'll come down to Rousey, Asuka, or Nia.
Or Bella. Or you don't think of Bella?
No.
Nia's not winning it.
No. Nia's not
I can see Nikki Bella doing it because they have this weird thing that Nikki Bella versus Charlotte is a dream match.
Do they think so? Who's dream?
Charlotte and Nikki and WWE employees. They have this weird thing that's a dream match to do it again. Whenever they talk on whenever either one of them do a podcast, Nikki will say her dream opponent is Charlotte, and Charlotte says her dream opponent is Nikki. It's really bizarre. I don't get it. And I'm someone that likes the Bellas more than the most, and I think it's more just of an out-of-ring ability of what I like what they've done as far as being entrepreneurs. In the ring, it's a lot to be desired, but that seems something that they both like, and you guarantee you're going to hear that music at the Royal Rumble this year from the Bellas.
You guarantee it?
I would put a pretty at least one of them is coming out during the Royal Rumble, if not both.
I don't know.
Who is the Money in the Bank, both Mr. and Mrs. Mo?
I just want to say this about the Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
It depends. Isn't she shooting a movie?
No, she's training.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure she's shooting a movie during the Royal Rumble.
I'm going to say Mo.
Oh, is she? Okay.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then I'm going to pick Nikki Bella then.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she's shooting a movie. And ideally, which is why she should win it at Elimination Chamber and Asuka should. It's just a matter of who's Rousey going to wrestle? Yes. Is she going to wrestle at Mania? Yes. So who's she going to wrestle? Is she going to be part of a tag team to hide her?
Yeah.
Or is she going to be in a one-on-one match? If she's going to be in a one-on-one match, is it going to be against Asuka, Alexa Bliss, which seems the least likely, or Charlotte? Those are your three choices, right? So who is the most likely of those three? To me, is probably Charlotte.
Makes sense. Who do you have as the Money in the Banks this year?
Well, I mean, it's so far away, but I'll pick my Money in the Bank, female Money in the Bank winner. We don't even know. Isn't this year supposed to be a Raw pay-per-view?
Yeah. I think they're doing two Money in the Banks, though, I believe. But let's just say it's just from Raw for now. We don't know what the roster is going to be like.
Yeah, you never know what any roster is going to be like. So I'm just going to throw something out there, money or shot in the dark, and say Natty.
Okay. And who's your male?
The male Money in the Bank winner, I'm going to say Sami Zayn.
Not a bad pick. Joel?
A heel Sami Zayn is that will be cool.
Joel?
I have no idea. I don't know who the roster is. I don't think they're even thinking that far ahead. So there's
no, definitely not. Definitely not. Just pick two randoms that you think and hope for the best.
That's what I did. And you're used to picking randoms.
I'm gonna leave that be. I'm gonna decide no.
You got too much glass for that.
I'm picking Samoa Joe for the male. Money in the Bank.
A very good pick.
And for the female, I am going to pick Liv Morgan.
Oof.
I know.
Yeah, well, it could be. Or it could be Mandy Rose. I mean, Mandy Rose, they think she's going to be a star.
I'm going to pick Mandy Rose, and I'm going to pick Bray Wyatt. Why? I don't know. I'm going to pick Bray Wyatt.
That's just the fun of picking it. But 2018, we the first today. And in 3 days, we have a chance to see maybe the show of the year already. So,
yeah, it's, get up yeah, to a pretty great much start. Almost guaranteed yeah. that we're going to get the show of the year in 3 days.
Yeah. all right. Well, everyone, thank you for listening to the One Fall Podcast with the Master of Charisma, Mo, the Ultimate Babyface,
Crown Prince,
the Prince of
Crown Charisma. Prince,
the Crown Prince of Charisma.
Good Lord!
You always find a way to screw that one up.
I always do, maybe on purpose. Anyways, until next time, everyone, thank you for listening. We look forward to doing the 2018 year in review.
Wait, don't I get to tell a joke?
Go ahead.
Ah.
You know, I bought some sneakers from my drug dealer. I don't know what he did to them, but I've been tripping all day.
And until next time, cheers and enjoy the year, people.